You're listening to episode 83 of 88 Cups of Tea with Yin Chang.
Am I doing this right? Hi, I'm your host, Yin Chang, and thanks for joining me on 88 Cups of Tea. This podcast is created to leave you feeling motivated from interviews with storytellers, where we learn how they create opportunities for a successful career without losing sight of the values that make us human. Whew, that was a really long run-on sentence.
What's up, Storyteller Tribe? So, did you know that our private Facebook group is an awesome space to be a part of? It's the perfect place for you to hang out if you're looking for a loving community to hang out with fellow storytellers and check in with each other about your work in progress. We also post threads where you can submit your listener questions for upcoming interviews with really cool guests. I know there's a lot of you who are focused on craft writing, and if that's you, there's amazing questions and resources passed around in our group, and there's even more support and encouragement going on in there. By the way, we also just recently started recording live Facebook videos that's exclusive for members in our private Facebook group only. We're talking about book hauls and unboxing videos, spontaneous giveaways, and sometimes I'll even record live videos where I'll chat with members in our group while I prepare for dinner. So be sure to come over and hang out with us at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. You'll feel right at home, and I'm so excited to hang out with you in there. That's facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. On to the next part of our intro. If you'd love to support our show and rock some 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to get your limited edition mug signed by yours truly. It's the perfect mug to keep you company during your writing sessions or your designated reading time or even board game night with family and friends. Thank you so much in advance for supporting our show. Now on to our show. Jack Chang is the author of See You in the Cosmos. Stellar and life-embracing are some of the words used to describe his debut novel by Entertainment Weekly and The Wall Street Journal. An Entertainment Weekly article describes Jack as an author with a knack for creating unique characters that stay with the reader long after the story has moved on. In Jack's episode, we jump right into the nitty-gritty about developing themes in your stories from the relationships and experiences in your own life. We discussed how a countrywide road trip led Jack to self-discovery and how that eye-opening experience inspired the story for See You in the Cosmos. Further into our conversation, we talk about why being understanding about the people around us helps to create the groundwork for our stories. Before writing his traditionally published debut novel, Jack successfully launched a Kickstarter campaign to fund his self-published book called These Days. We go into detail about his Kickstarter journey and the community that showed up to support his writing dream. We also talk about his background as an entrepreneur and what the transition was like from self-publishing to traditional publishing. We also unpack the importance of following your passions first and then making sense of it all later. For listeners working on query letters to send out to literary agents, Jack shares his take on writing a successful letter by being honest, kind, and gracious. He also shares his advice on surviving financially as a writer and how journaling helps you reach your writing goals the way it did for him. Now let's jump right in. Hey everyone, we have Jack Chang with us today. Jack, what's up? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so excited to have you here. So you're from Shanghai and then you moved to Michigan and then moved to Brooklyn. Correct. What made you go back to Michigan?
It was a combination of things. I spent probably a total of 9 years in New York. I moved there right after I graduated from the University of Michigan here. My last couple of years in New York, I had left my job to focus on my writing, and I was still doing freelance work, mostly doing design for websites and apps and things like that. Around the time I went freelance, I realized that I didn't have to stay in New York for the winter. And so I gave up the lease on my apartment in Brooklyn and spent a winter in South America. Coming back from that, I just wasn't ready to be settled. And so I did some more traveling and I was doing the sublet thing, a combination of me buying an old Prius and I had this car and I didn't have a lease and I was going to be back in Michigan for friends' weddings and bachelor parties and things like that. I'd been hearing so much about the city of Detroit, and growing up in the suburbs, it was a very different storyline that we had about the city, where we never really went down there except for sporting events. I'd been hearing all these interesting things about Detroit, I was going to be back in Michigan anyway. I didn't have a lease. I had a car. And so I figured, why not come hang out for a few months? And that has turned into 2.5 years.
I know that you have a pretty interesting story when you moved here. Can you tell us more about you growing up with your family, coming to Michigan? What was that like?
I remember only bits and pieces of that early experience. So we moved from Shanghai when I was 5. And my dad actually came 6 months before my mom and I got here. He was going to the University of Detroit Mercy to get his master's in electrical engineering. It was this weird thing where he had gotten here before my mom and I did, and he was trying to set up a home for us in the Detroit area. And he has a story about how he was just walking around in this wealthier neighborhood in Detroit called Palmer Woods. And he stumbled upon this party happening in someone's backyard or lawn or something like that. He just walked right up and started talking to people. And he met this woman who was looking for live-in care and housekeeping for her elderly sister who lived in this gigantic house and had a golden retriever all by herself.
Oh.
And so when my mom and I first got here, it was actually the very first place we lived. I remember living is in this basically this like huge mansion with a dog. We didn't stay there for very long. We stayed there for maybe a few months. My early experience in Detroit, we spent a little bit of time in the city itself, and then we were basically moving further out from the city into the suburbs. We hopped around a lot and lived in various apartment buildings in different suburbs around Detroit in my elementary and middle school years. And then my parents bought a house in the suburb called Troy.
I remember reading that about you, and I was like, just shows, first of all, your dad being so awesome and ballsy. More people need to be like that. They'll get things done. And I feel like more people would achieve their dreams and goals way faster having your dad's determination. And also the kindness of people. They knew that it was a whole family, even though you said it was for a short bit, that first home, the mansion with the golden retriever, which, by the way, how awesome. You had a nice introduction with the Goldie.
I don't remember much of that first home, but I do remember some of those early experiences when, after we left that place, you know, trying to find other places to get really be settled. It was around that time that we really benefited from the kindness of different people in the community. There were people who were members of the Asian American community. And I think because the University of Detroit Mercy was like a Jesuit school, my parents grew up in secular, like Mao's communist China. That was very unfamiliar to them. There were definitely members of that community that really helped us out and really saw that here was this immigrant family that was, in some cases, just needed a break and needed a little bit of support and help. Yeah, and I think there's a part of me that didn't really see just how remarkable that was, because it was the experience that I knew. It was this environment where I expected people to be good and benevolent. And I think that those early instances where we did receive that kind of help, they were really formative, and they were really, thinking back, they really left an impression on the worldview that I still have today.
I think that was so important that you shared that, because right now there was a lot of fear happening. And to hear your story specifically, your personal story, it just really restores a lot of faith in humanity. And it's so refreshing to hear that. All this news right now is just not helping. So it's really nice to hear that. I would love to circle around. And we know that you have See You in the Cosmos out right now. It actually recently just came out. And you also had These Days. That was published in 2013. You remind me a lot about your dad and his story, where you're just such a go-getter. You just go for it. You raised $24,000 from 961 Kickstarter backers to publish your book, These Days. You'd be the first guest to have done the Kickstarter route. What inspired you to want to do Kickstarter in the first place?
Going chronologically, that book started as a result of journaling practice. I was doing the morning pages from The Artist's Way. Every morning I would try to write 3 pages or 750 words. That was a practice that started around the time I was really getting into designing for the web and for tech and building websites and apps and things like that. It was around that time I started a small digital design studio with a couple friends. You know, we were all sort of working remotely and working from home those early days of that company. And I had just picked up this journaling practice. Every day I tried to write a little bit, and it was usually whatever was on my mind and what I was thinking about for that day. And then I remember one day I just sat down to write and I didn't have anything to write. And this scene popped into my head. It was actually more of a memory of the very first time after I had first moved to New York that I went to IKEA. It's a rite of passage, that first trip to IKEA after you move into a new place. I remember walking around IKEA and noticing that they had these plastic prop computers on some of the desks. They were covered with these screens that were designed to look like Windows or like a Mac, but you could tell that they weren't really Windows or Mac. And I remember just thinking that was somebody's job, that someone had to design the screen. I remember that scene. I wrote it down. The next day I wrote down another scene. And a few weeks later, I was like, oh, this is something, it's not a book yet, but it's something that could be turned into a novel. So these days, one of my main characters has that job. He designs those screens. And the book's about his relationship with a girl who doesn't have a cell phone. And they're both in their mid-20s and living in New York. That book became this like nights and weekends thing where as my company was growing and we were getting more involved in designing and building digital products and things like that, I turned to the novel as a way to reflect and in some cases vent about the things that were frustrating me about day-to-day work. Around that time, also, I was aware of a couple friends who had done the Kickstarter thing and self-published their own books. My friend Robin Sloan, who is also now a published author, he kickstarted his science fiction novella called Annabelle Scheme. That was one of the first books that I'd seen funded on Kickstarter. My friend Nick, he's a designer, and he wrote this book called Caden and Slang, and it's about interaction design. And so he had also done the Kickstarter thing for that. These things were on my radar as I was working on These Days. That was always an option. I had seen that my friends had done it. And so I was like, I can talk to them. I can figure out how they managed to do that. I did send the manuscript for These Days around to a number of agents, see what the response would be. And for the most part, I didn't even hear back. I got a few polite rejections. I just took that to mean that the manuscript wasn't that good yet. The way I started thinking about it was, this is not the only book I'm going to write. I could see myself writing a dozen or more books. I treated the Kickstarter experience as just a way to learn how to both write and publish a novel from start to finish. I approached it with this attitude of, I'm just going to learn from this. And it was around that time that I was getting like a second or third draft of the novel, sat down with a friend of mine for dinner, and I was telling him that my plans to do the Kickstarter project and just about how generally getting so much more out of writing than I was with from my design work. I said that I'd be willing to move back to my parents' house in Michigan and live out of their basement so that I could keep doing it. And he was just like, why don't you just do that? What's stopping you from doing that? That conversation that really gave me permission. It was also that moment that I really started thinking of myself as a writer.
What's crazy is that I understand that you had friends around you who were doing these successful Kickstarter projects, but you had a lot of backers. You had nearly 1,000 backers. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
I've done a Kickstarter project too. Thank God it was successfully raised, or else all of it would have been gone. As we know, Kickstarters, either you get it all or nothing. Nearly 1,000 backers is a lot. Did they know you through your previous work with your tech side? And then it was word of mouth from there? Or was this these Kickstarter people were looking online on Kickstarter and they see, oh, I see Jack Chang's project, and it seems like a cool project. I've never met him before, but would love to help with this.
So my goal for the project was $10,000. What I based that goal on was I was trying to print hardcover books. So it was the economics of how many people do I need, or how many hardcovers do I need to print to make sense to do a print run. Based on that, it was me thinking, how many people do I personally know who I'm pretty confident would back this book? And because I had been working in design and in tech, and even before that, before tech, I was working in advertising for a few years, I had a little bit of a following just from the blog posts that I would write. And so it was early days. And I had met people at conferences. Even though it was a novel, it was something that was still very specifically for my friends and friends of friends, for people who were working in the New York and the tech community. And so it wasn't something that was like unrelated to what I was doing. I think that definitely helped me find the early backers, and it helped me get to that initial goal of $10,000 and a few hundred backers. I think after the project had been live for a couple weeks and we had already reached our goal, then it was featured in the Kickstarter newsletter. One thing that also made it different was that a work of literary fiction, some of the book projects that were on Kickstarter at that time, tended to be more genre fiction, like a fantasy novel. A combination of different factors made it stand out a bit. And so I was lucky enough to get featured in the Kickstarter weekly newsletter. I got another boost from that. But yeah, I would say probably like 2/3 of the backers just came from either friends or friends of friends.
Dude, you have so many friends. Oh my gosh. And huge congrats on getting featured in the newsletter. I know that's not an easy thing. And just in case listeners listening in who are not familiar with Kickstarter, they're really super picky about who they select and who they feature in their newsletters and who they choose to give a boost to. I have so much respect for people who are very, you know what, you got a dream, go for it. I would love to ask you how your parents felt about this whole transition into becoming a full-time writer.
for a long time, they didn't even know what really that I did. Even when I was working in advertising or in design, that it was just like, oh yeah, it's something with like computers and something with the internet. I think even growing up, I have a younger brother, and growing up, I had my interests and I would just go off, lock myself in my room and sort of pursue those things. I was very self-directed, and my parents recognized that. They had that faith, and their approach has always just been very hands-off with me. I could definitely tell my mom was a little anxious and she was worried that I wouldn't be able to support myself. Overall, they've been very supportive. Like, if you need to borrow money, just let us know. I do feel like sometimes Asian parents get a bad rap. I always think my parents will react more strongly against something that I do than they actually end up doing. In my case, speaking for myself, my parents have just been very open and very understanding. I feel very fortunate.
Your parents sound like awesome people, dude. I feel like usually I talk to my friends, I mean, from home. I had a small group of really close girlfriends growing up from middle school onwards, and most of them were Chinese American or Taiwanese American. And when I mentioned wanting to go into the acting world, I don't think it was a concept that they understood. I just thought that was like a traditional thing. I would expect our parents' generation to be like, what, WTF? No, get your ass back in school. But it was my friends. I remember one or two of them especially were very supportive, but then the others were, I don't know. I'd love to know what was your mom's reaction? What was your dad's reaction? What was your little brother's reaction?
To my parents, I don't think their sense of the difference between self-publishing and getting published by a traditional publisher, I don't think they have a full understanding of the differences between the two. What was more exciting for them, I think, for Seeing the Cosmos, the translation rights have been sold to 20 different territories. And one of those was China. And I happened to be in Shanghai with my family when I got word of that. Finding out about that was very exciting. We went out to dinner to celebrate. Right. Learning that this book was going to be translated, or that it was something that was happening, finding out that there was going to be this publisher in China that was going to put out the book, that was a huge deal. And I've been sending my dad, my entire family, some of the press clippings. My dad, he sent me back a press clipping of his own, this article about him having just graduated a couple years after we moved to Michigan, is sort of about his early experiences and about us as a family. There were a lot of examples of us getting help from other people in the community. I learned about some of those things from that article that my dad sent back to me. It's been so interesting to exchange those things.
First of all, congratulations on your book being translated into all these different languages. That's so awesome. And it's almost transformative. It almost evolves your father-son relationship into even a deeper, more meaningful one. That's really beautiful. When will it be out?
We don't have a publication date for Chinese yet, but I imagine it'll be sometime later this year.
I can't wait to hear when your family gets a hold of it and what they're going to think of it. I think that's going to be awesome. And you get to show off to all your relatives.
Everyone in our parents' generation, they're all on WeChat. I'm wondering how the news about the book has been spreading from them through the various chat web.
My dad's side is definitely the side that's not supportive at all. I don't really talk to them, but my mom's side is so supportive. Again, I think it's because of their dad, my grandpa, being an artist growing up and moving them around from Malaysia to Michigan and then to New York and then everywhere. So I think they're used to that artist lifestyle and understanding the arts and that it can put a roof over your head. What about your relatives? I know your parents are supportive. That's mine. But what about your actual relatives?
I have 4 first cousins. Each of them is doing something that is very contemporary to the world that we live in. So one of them works for the Chinese version of Yelp. They're all in Shanghai. Another one, he worked after he graduated, he went to New Zealand to go work at Weta Digital doing 3D animation and things like that. Another cousin of mine works at the Apple store in Shanghai. And so my extended family, they're very aware of modern youth. They've been super supportive. My aunt on my mom's side, she's been like, hey, you know, I know some publishers. If you're looking for someone who, you know, to translate it, like, I can put you in touch. Found in my experience of just like Chinese culture in general is that there is this deep pragmatism that's like, okay, you know, obviously we worry about you and we worry, you know, you'll be able to like make a living and have a home and things like that. But I think in my family, there's just been an openness and a sensitivity to like both the arts and both technology and these newer jobs.
That's good. I love that you recognize that too and that you're grateful for that. You know, touching on See You in the Cosmos, Could you give a little snapshot of what See You in the Cosmos is about for those readers who haven't gotten a chance to check it out yet?
Yeah, See You in the Cosmos is about Alex, who is 11 years old, and he's living in Colorado. Alex is half Filipino. His mom's side of the family is Filipino. And so Alex is trying to launch his iPod into space. He's following in the footsteps of his hero, the astronomer Carl Sagan. And he actually also has a dog named Carl Sagan. Beginning of the story is him about to go to a rocket festival in the New Mexico desert to launch his rocket that's carrying this iPod. The way the story is told is actually as transcriptions of the recordings that Alex is making on his iPod. Instead of chapters, each chapter is a new recording on the iPod. He goes on this journey, and I think on the surface, he's trying to launch this thing into space. What's also going on in his life is that his father died when he was really young. He has a much older brother who lives in a different state. And there's something really mysterious going on with relationship with his mother, that she's troubled in a way that isn't fully, I don't think is fully conscious to Alex. And so the story is also kind of about him trying to understand his own life and his family. Those themes of family and those themes of me trying to understand my dad's experience first coming to this country, they're very prevalent throughout the book, and not in a way that was like fully intentional when I started writing it. Something that I find really remarkable and really nourishing about writing fictions and working on novels is that when I'm writing, I'm experiencing this dream. And I see all these figures and characters and they interact with each other. Even after the book is done, I'm still going back and analyzing the dream and interpreting it and trying to understand what it means. And I find that those interpretations, they still work their way through my life and through my understanding of my own family and my own situation.
With writing, there's always some type of subconscious thoughts that comes out, no matter what genre or whatever it is. There's always something that I do believe that we pull from our own experiences, whether we realize it or not. That's a question that's so universal. What is family? What is this connection to family? I love that you asked that universal question in See You in the Cosmos. That's what I loved about that. I do know earlier you were saying that you had this trip that you were going through the American Southwest, and I would love to know if you can dive a little bit more into that and how that was, in a way, paralleled your journey with the main characters, Alex, in See You in the Cosmos.
So my dad, he flew from Shanghai. He actually landed in San Francisco first, and he went to visit some friends there, and then he went down to LA to visit another friend. From there, he took the Greyhound bus from LA to Detroit, which was 2.5 days or something like that, and he had found his old journal from that time and then had sent it to me. My grasp of Chinese is not that great. I saw it as this little project, try to translate my dad's journal. And then we would do these Skype conversations, like go over and I'd ask him, oh, what did you mean here? Like, what happened here? Things about his wide-eyed experience. They stopped in Las Vegas at the bus stop. They had one of those crane games. And he was watching someone put in quarters to play it. And he like wrote about that in his journal. He wrote about the first hamburger that he had. And he was comparing it to steam buns and like,
oh my God, I love that. That's awesome.
And this was around the time that I started working on See You in the Cosmos. I didn't really know where the story was going to take place there. I didn't realize how much this would play into it. But I decided to do this road trip where I was flying to Colorado for a friend's bachelor party. And then I took the Amtrak from Colorado to San Francisco through the Rockies and through Utah and Nevada. And from there, I saw some friends in San Francisco. And then I went down to LA and hung out with another friend there. And then I rented a car and drove around in the Southwest for 2 weeks. And at the end of that arc, I was probably on the road for like a month. The plan was to take the Greyhound bus from LA to Detroit and repeat my dad's journey. It was funny because on that trip, when I repeated that trip, I just slept most of the bus, right? I pretty much slept the entire 2.5 days. Everything that led up to that point was just so, not only like formative for me, but I think in hindsight, it went so much into shaping not only the setting of See You in the Cosmos, but this underlying theme that we talked about of trying to understand family and understand our parents' experience and understand, yeah, what really like family and home really mean. For most of my life, what I've done is I've just had things I was naturally interested in that I would start doing as these hobbies or sort of these like side things. I thought, hey, it'd be cool to go on a road trip. And I wasn't really doing it with the intent that, oh, you know, then I could build this into a novel or I could turn this into something. For me, it's more, I try to follow the things that I'm interested in and sometimes the things that I'm like obsessed about. After doing those as a hobby for long enough, I have this moment of realization that, oh, this thing I've been doing as a hobby could become a full-time gig. It's more me just trying to move through my life and do things that resonate with me and that feel like the right things to do. And then afterwards, going back and then making sense of them and then trying to see, how can I connect these two things? How can I bring in everything that has happened to me into whatever I'm doing now? So it's less of this planned or structured way of moving through my life, and more I try to follow my passions and then afterwards try to make sense of it and try to make meaning out of it.
Man, okay, talk about artiste. Jack, that was beautiful. So here's 3 rapid fire questions. First one is tips on query letters.
Just be straightforward and honest and don't try to overwrite it. Being simple, direct, and kind and gracious with time and attention of the person you're sending the letter to. I met my agent through that Kickstarter project. She came across it because it was featured in the newsletter. Inevitably, we connected as a result of just me deciding to self-publish my first novel, which was another one of those unexpected surprises of just following this thing and doing this thing that I was naturally interested in. I don't know if you saw this, but I'm actually doing a podcast myself at the moment. It tells the backstory of how that happened, and it's me interviewing all the different people that were involved in the making of Seed in the Cosmos.
I know that listeners would love that because they're all about the behind the scenes. So I think that's going to be a fantastic podcast to follow for them. Thank you for that. I think that's going to be really inspiring and resourceful for them. For the second question, money, tips on making income or just enough to feed yourself so you could get by and put a roof over your head.
How that first book happened was that I had a full-time job and I was just doing it in my spare time. I'd try to spend an hour every day writing. I would say that if you don't have to quit your day job, find a way to carve out even 30 minutes a day to write. Over time, it adds up. Even after you're a published author, there's still this question of, oh, is this advance or whatever going to last me until I can finish my next book? You should treat writing as a full-time job in terms of the seriousness with which you approach it. But you don't need to treat it as a literal full-time job where you work 8 hours a day, that it can be done even as a spare time thing.
Love that. The advice that you gave for that question might lean in towards the third and final rapid fire question. So the third question is, what are small manageable steps you would advise writers to take every week towards accomplishing their writing goals?
For me, one of the most important things is to actually have that writing practice. Sometimes when I haven't written in a while, how I'll get going is I'll sit and journal. And it's almost like you're on an alien planet and you're working to terraform the landscape to make it habitable for life. That journaling practice is you pumping oxygen into the atmosphere and you building soil.
Damn, I love that.
When you get into the habit of sitting down in front of your computer and sitting for this specific time every day, at some point, it's so natural for me to shift from typing these words about my life to typing these other words about my story. And I just keep going back to that. I'm actually doing that right now because I was just recently on a brief tour for the book. I didn't get a chance to really write on the tour. And now that I'm back, I'm like sitting down every morning and just trying to journal every morning to get started and to get in that habit again.
That was inspiring. I love that. And I love the way you compared it to creating a place that you can actually live in and breathing the air into that space. That was brilliant. And I love the images too. Okay, so let's wrap it up by asking you, what books can you recommend or do you recommend for our listeners who love fiction and also craft writing books?
So Seed in the Cosmos, it's for young readers. It's technically younger than young adult. It's in this category called middle grade. Right around the time after it got acquired by a publisher and we had decided that it was going to come out as a middle grade novel, my editor sent me and some other friends of mine, you know, recommended me a bunch of books in the category to help me see what's possible in the category. A couple of the ones that come to mind, the novel Feed by M.T. Anderson. It's sort of this sci-fi-ish novel. You think it's a sci-fi adventure story, but then you read it and it's actually just about teenagers living in the future. And it's very much about how teenagers will be teenagers. That really opened my mind to what was possible in the world of young adult fiction. Another book that did that similarly, I think, for middle grade, When You Reach Me by Rebecca Stead.
I like that title.
It also has these science fiction-y time travel elements in it.
You're so cool. And I love that you shared your family stories, especially because I'm all about that. And I love it when I have guests that are so open and transparent in sharing that. So thank you for opening up like that. And thank you for your time, Jack.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. It was a pleasure for me as well.
And that wraps up our episode with the awesome Jack Chang. Jack, thanks so much for a wonderful conversation. It was so great to have you on the show. Storytellers, I am so grateful to you for your support and thank you for always being a part of our community. Please say hi to Jack on Twitter at Jack Cheng. Jack recommended fantastic resources for you to check out, and we have them all linked up in his show notes page over at 88cupsoftea.com/podcast/Jack Cheng. If you'd love to support our show by rocking your 88 Cups of Tea swag, head over to 88cupsoftea.com/mug to grab your limited edition 88 Cups of Tea mug signed by yours truly. Thank you so much in advance for showing your love and supporting our show. That's 88cupsoftea.com/mug. And don't forget to join our Facebook group if you're looking for an intimate community for storytellers where you can check in about your writing and hang out with other storytellers. You can also submit questions for future guests on our show, and we recently added live unboxing and book haul videos. So join me over in our new Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/88cupsoftea. There's tons of love, support, and encouragement going on in this special community of ours. I can't wait to meet you in there. Come on over and join us at facebook.com/group/88cupsoftea. Have an amazing rest of your week, and I'll catch you in the next episode.
Hey guys, it's me again. Thanks so much for listening in on 88 Cups of Tea. Go create something magical today, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Bye.